and they wondered why the people were kind of lethargic or depressed. Well, here's something. If you're in a spaceship, but you're not actually in a spaceship, you're simply underground someplace in a confined area, and you know that when you get out, you won't have gone anywhere, I think that's a good condition to get depressed around and to feel like, what's the point? Whereas if you actually are in a spaceship and you see an alien planet getting closer and closer with every single day, you might not be so depressed. You might be a bit more interested in what's going on. I just don't see how this experiment in any way resembles actually being in space, except for the actual space that you're taking up. But the entire circumstances surrounding it are so dramatically different that I just don't see how you can draw any parallels. So, no. Invalid. Do it again. Do it right this time. Send somebody up into space. What would have been so bad of sending somebody into space and doing the study that way? You know? Is that any worse than bottling somebody up underneath the streets of Moscow or wherever it was they happened to be and taking notes that way? I don't get to make these decisions, though. You know, I'd like to play something else, too. I'd like to play an excerpt from last week's State of the State address by Governor Cuomo that you might have heard. I heard it by accident. Didn't even know it was happening. But it's a reason I can say that I'm actually proud to be a New Yorker. Let's listen.
I know that the issue of gun control is hard. I know it's political. I know it's controversial. But we are proposing today common sense measures. And I say to you, forget the extremists. It's simple. No one hunts with an assault rifle. No one needs 10 bullets to kill a deer. And too many innocent people have died already. End the madness now. Pass safe, reasonable gun control in the state of New York. Make this state safer. Save lives. Set an example for the rest of the nation. Let them look at New York and say, this is what you can do, and this is what you should do. This is New York, the progressive capital. You show them how we lead. We can do it. We've done it before. We can do it again.
And I believe they did it today. I believe the law was actually signed. So, wow, New York State taking the lead on gun control. Now, of course, not everybody agrees. People upstate are rather angry. Some people upstate. But you know what? Too bad. Not everyone's going to be happy with every law. Fact is, this is what the people want. And let's just move on already. As I understand it, there aren't secret armies coming from the mountains from the United Nations that are taking people's hunting rifles and pistols and things like that. I don't think that's what's going to happen. Yet I'm seeing all these articles about how upstate gun owners are angry. But, you know, as the good governor said, nobody needs, well, some people might need 10 bullets to kill a deer, but you know what? They shouldn't be out there hunting deer in the first place if they're such lousy shots. This is to keep people safe. It's to keep ridiculous weapons out of the hands of people. This is to restore the true meaning of the Second Amendment. And hopefully it's a step in the right direction for the rest of the country as well. We shall see. So, New York has passed that. The NRA is saying that, and I don't know why we're paying attention to them either. We need to stop paying attention to them because they're becoming more and more irrelevant. The National Rifle Association does not represent individuals. They represent companies. They represent gun companies, manufacturers. Those are the people that they stand up for. Now, you might be a member. You might think that they're standing up for you, but basically they're luring you in and making it seem with their twisted logic and history that stand up for anything that that you believe in, and they really don't. They really don't care. It's about money. It's about power. It's about influence. Anyway, various groups, mostly the NRA, is saying that bids to ban assault weapons and high-capacity ammunition clips would fail in Congress. And, you know, if there are Congress people out there that aren't willing to vote for an assault weapon ban, then they should not be in power. Simple as that. Because the majority of people do want this. And no amount of doublespeak is going to change that. Not anymore. Even some congressional Democrats indicated that a bill to revive the U.S. assault weapons ban that expired in 2004 would have a difficult time winning passage in the Republican-controlled House of Representatives and Democratic-led Senate. So, they say an assault weapons standalone ban on just guns alone, in the political reality that we have today, will not go anywhere, according to Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. NRA President David Keene signaled little appetite for compromise as the White House mulls action on gun violence after the December 14th massacre in Connecticut. What we put the brakes on is anything that simply takes away a person's Second Amendment right for no good reason, he said. The likelihood is that they are not going to be able to get an assault weapons ban through the Congress. And asked about new limits on high-capacity ammunition clips, he added, I don't ultimately think they are going to get that either. When asked if there is anything he can suggest to make things safer, they just basically fall back on more guns. Yeah, more guns, and that somehow will make us safer. There have been so many pieces about this. There's been so much discussion and debate. It's a healthy thing. It's good to have the conversation, but it's bad to give up. It's bad to assume that your side is not going to be taken seriously or that you're helpless and can't do anything. Fact of the matter is you can do a lot, and all you have to do is speak up. It's what we've been saying here at this place for so many years. It's what I've learned over and over again. I saw a piece today on the CNN website by David Frum, and it said one thing which I thought was really interesting. The gun laws intended to put guns into the hands of good guys, which is what we've been hearing from the NRA, that a good guy with a gun is the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun. Those gun laws that are intended to put guns into the hands of good guys are the same laws that also multiply guns in the hands of bad guys. Bad guys who might not have become such bad guys if the guns had not been available to their hands. And that's something we need to keep in mind, that what constitutes a bad person? Bad people don't get born bad. They become bad. Something happens. They're good up until the point that they're bad. And since the NRA would defend the right of anybody to get any weapon, they're basically, to coin a phrase, shooting themselves in the foot. Because they're the ones encouraging as many people as possible to get weapons. And then those are the same people that go berserk over one thing or another, and horrible things happen as a result. So we're going to be following that, obviously, in weeks ahead. And tomorrow, more attention will be paid to it. You'll hear it throughout the mass media as well, as Obama comes up with some actual steps, which hopefully will mean something. All right, again, our email address, otw@2600.com. In the couple minutes that we have left, let's just go over a couple of other stories which have been lying around, which I'd like to get out of the way. Yeah, hear about this guy in California who was driving in the carpool lane with corporation papers in the passenger seat? Yeah, Jonathan Freeman, San Rafael, California. He was pulled over for driving alone in the carpool lane. He argued to the officer that actually he did have a passenger. He waved his corporation papers at the officer, told him that the corporations, since corporations are people under California law, that this was, in fact, another person. And I guess two people constitutes an HOV lane. So that'll be an interesting case when it does go to court, if it ever does. But yeah, an interesting point being proven there. You hear about this? This is kind of a weird story that was on the Associated Press. Police in Oregon say a woman told officers that her boyfriend choked her with his dreadlocks. Now, you know, it's not that really interesting a story. It's kind of horrible, actually. Police spokesman said the guy was arrested for investigation of several domestic violence felony crimes, including strangulation, fourth-degree assault, secondary kidnapping, etc., etc. What's most interesting is the last line of this article in the Associated Press that felt it had to explain. Dreadlocks are matted ropes of hair. Now, I just wonder how many TV news and radio people read that word for word and felt that they had to also explain to their listeners and viewers what dreadlocks were. And I guess there are people out there who don't know what dreadlocks are. Well, to each their own, I suppose, but we need to be paying more attention. And this story was just sent in to us, actually, by Rob T. Firefly from Off the Hook. Many of us have probably already broken our New Year's resolutions by now, if we ever made any to begin with. But one woman in, where else, Seattle, said she is determined to stick out the entire 365 days of 2013, consuming nothing but products made by Starbucks and its associated companies. Kind of the opposite of what I was doing my whole life, where I didn't go to Starbucks until a couple of years ago. It's perhaps good timing that she's doing this year-long experiment after Starbucks has acquired Tazo Tea and Evolution Fresh Juices. I didn't know that. That way, she's not just limited to the standard Starbucks hot beverages. Well, they have cold beverages, too, in Starbucks. I mean, I don't know if this writer has ever been in one of them, but and they have sandwiches and all kinds of things. I don't want to be advertising what they have, but yeah, you could probably get away with this, I suppose. I've been going in and getting their nutrition by the cup charts for all their serving sizes. A woman whose actual name... Oh, really? Her actual name is Beautiful Existence. That's her actual name. A choice... you know, I'm not sure if this is the author saying, because it's in parentheses and not in quotes. A choice my mom came oh so close to making when I was born. I think it's the author injecting. Well, thank you, Chris Moran, for injecting your words into this. But the story's not about you, is it? No. Okay, her name is Beautiful Existence. I'm already getting a feel for what to eat. The plain nut pack as a snack because it only has 190 calories compared to the piece of pumpkin bread. Of course, this all comes with what some would call a hefty price. So far, she's averaging $18.79 a day on food and drink from Starbucks. For those of you who eat out all the time, this might seem like pennies, but some bargain shoppers who save money by eating in and making their own coffee will probably see that as wasteful. Oh, I see the traveling music is on, so we're on our way out of here. Let's finish the story, though. Ms. Existence, who says she does not work for Starbucks and is receiving no payment for her efforts, says she doesn't mind spending the money. The company pays good benefits for part-time workers. She explains, that's where my money is going. And for those interested in following this story, Ms. Existence's exploits are updated on a regular basis on her personal blog. And when I said on her personal blog, there was a link contained there, which when you print out a story, doesn't print the link. It just prints on her personal blog and underlines that. Maybe people who put together news stories should think about that, that if you print it out, you can't see the link because it's embedded into the HTML code. And we don't speak HTML in real life, do we? No, we don't. All right, that's it for the show. OTW at 2600.com. Stay tuned for basketball, where we teach Boston a thing or two. Good night. We'll be right back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Rackham here in the studio. We'll be getting you set for some Seawolves basketball, men's basketball action this evening. Taking on and hosting Boston University here for a 7 o'clock tip-off. And both teams' records going into the game, Stony Brook 12-4, overall Boston U 8-9. And so with that being said, we're going to send it to Mike Solano, Kurt Hilton, and Jeff Bernstein, who will be giving us the play-by-play live from Pritchard Gymnasium.
Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to Stony Brook University men's basketball here on WUSB. As tonight, as Rackham mentioned, it is BU taking on the Seawolves here at Pritchard Gymnasium as the Seawolves look to match their best America East start, which they established just a year ago, trying to go 4-0 once again to start conference play. Along with Kurt Hilton and Jeff Bernstein, Mike Solano along with you for the next couple of hours as Boston University comes to Pritchard Gymnasium for the final time as the member of the America East Conference. The Seawolves guys looking to send them packing with their proverbial tails between their legs.
Yeah, well, I had a chance, you know, just not too long ago to bump into Jeff and I, old friend Joe Jones, head coach of the Terriers, and it's exactly what he led off with, you know, hey, it's our last go-around here, huh? And, you know, a little bit sad. Love Joe, but love the rivalry as well. And, it's become a pretty good one ever since the year that Muhammad El-Amin won Player of the Year. I think that year was very, very exciting. It was a back-and-forth. Corey Lowe, John Holland, some great names from Boston University. Of course, Seawolves, you know, they had young Tommy Brenton, Dallas Joyner, Brian Duer, that great class. So it's been a very, very exciting run between these two teams since the Seawolves kind of put themselves on the map. And it'll be a shame to see it go by the wayside.
Yeah, totally agree. Just, you know, that asterisk next to it where it could have went another way, where BU could have handled it differently. I think they know they made a mistake where they could have announced at the end of the year that they're going to the Patriot League where they could have been part of the playoffs and everything like that. But I totally agree with Kurt where it's the last time in Pritchard for now in the conference. Who knows down the road what might happen. But, Joe is definitely a part of Pritchard Gymnasium himself. He spent a lot of time here when he was a coach at Comswag High School, you know, just learning the craft and,
Spent a lot of time here playing some pickup games,
right,
back in the day too.
Exactly.
Joe had some game. Looks like he can still play. I mean, the guy doesn't age at all.
This is his stomping grounds, and I'm sure he has fond memories of this place. But for Stony Brook, got to win your home games because after this they go on the road a lot. You only six more home games after this. That's it. They've got to take care of business because they got a big one on Friday at Vermont.
Yeah, 5 out of the next 6 games after tonight on the road, as Jeff mentioned, taking us right into the month of February, the last full month of the season. And as Jeff also just alluded to, some big week for the Seawolves. Last few years, it's been Stony Brook, Vermont, and Boston University as the top tier of the America East, and the Seawolves will play both of those rivals this week, starting tonight with BU, gearing up for a big road date at Patrick Gymnasium Friday night against the Vermont Catamounts. So certainly defending home court even more paramount when you have a big road game like Vermont coming up.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it's one of the points of emphasis of head coach Steve Pico always at the beginning of the year, and then he reinforces it at the beginning of the conference season, defending home court, how important that is. And the Seawolves' record over the last three or four years here at Pritchard speaks for itself. It's been stellar, and it's become one of the toughest places in college basketball to play.
As far as the game goes tonight, Steve Pikel, the coach of the Seawolves, sat down with Jeff Bernstein just a few moments before tonight's tip-off. Let's get the head coach's thoughts on tonight's conference matchup against BU.
Moments before tonight's game between Stony Brook and Boston University, we're talking to head men's basketball coach Steve Pikel. And coach, just briefly summarize the game against Hartford. They came in undefeated, and you guys met the challenge.
Well, you know, excited about how we played defensively. Loved 32 minutes. I think we had as good a 32 minutes as we've had did a great job on, you know, their post players, and we did a great job at defending the three. And, you know, we're really locked in and focused. So I like that kind of game preparation and how we kind of took the preparation and put it into the game. And so excited about that. And then moving forward here, very different team in Boston University, very different challenges. Two of the fastest guards in the conference, and I think very talented starting five. So real challenging game today, and a different game, kind of more of a man-to-man, break you down off the dribble kind of a team. So individually, we got to play great defense, where Hartford was more of a team defensive kind of night. Now individually, we got to do a great job of keeping the ball out of the middle.
You know, I say to protect home court, you guys that are, have done a great job doing that. Some thoughts about that, you know, doing a good job, and then tonight?
Well, I mean, we only have six home games, you know, and six home games left. That includes tonight. So you got to protect home court if you're going to try to win a championship. And we've certainly done a good job here in the past, and hopefully that continues tonight. We're still down a starter in Anthony Jackson. Hope to have him back soon. But we'll go to our bench, and our bench has been very good. Trey Purifoy will start at the point today, and hopefully he'll continue his good play as league games roll on here.
Weird situation for BU. I think their playoff games are during the regular season. You know, they're trying to make their mark during each game. So, you know, they're trying to be the quote-unquote spoiler of the league. Some thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, BU's been a very good program for a long time, and Coach Jones is an awesome coach and a real good guy. And he's got really, really talented group. But they're leaving our league and heading to a new conference next year. And, you know, they're playing for pride, and they're playing to spoil. And they're playing to win a championship, too, which gives them a postseason bid. So a lot at stake for them, and they're good players. DJ Irvin's one of the best in the league. Don Morris has won a lot of games. I mean, so they have some veteran players who have been through it. But much respect for their program and for the coaching staff. They do a real good job.
It was a good test the last game. You had to sort of extend your bench a little, you know, with AJ being out, and they did a good job doing that.
You know what? You know, our bench really came up and gave us good numbers. I mean, Marcus Rouse has been good coming off the bench all year, and Lenny Hayes and Trey Purifoy now in the starting lineup, and Ben Reznor has to play minutes. So he's our backup point, and he did a good job coming in the other night and giving us good minutes, and he's going to have to do that again today. But, you know, I think between Ron Bracey and between Anthony Mayo and Scott King, you know, we got a lot of different players, too, coming off the bench that bring us different dimensions that we try to plug in, you know, depending on the team we're playing. So, you know, a bench very, very important to us, and those guys are as critical to our success as the starters.
You know, very happy that you've got to the point where even with intercession and the students still not back yet, the community really doing a great job of another complete sellout here tonight.
Yeah, I mean, can't thank the community enough. You know, our cheerleaders, our dance team, our band, which is awesome. I mean, we have the best band in the country. And, you know, our community continues to step up. They like our team. They continue to support us. And more importantly, they support our players who, you know, take a lot of pride in playing basketball the right way and playing hard. And it's great to have that kind of support, even without the students, the general student population on campus during winter break.
You get that great exposure locally, but today, once again, you get to get exposure on the national level on ESPN.
Well, I mean, anytime you play on ESPN, it's exciting. You know, today's game on ESPN3, and then our next game, you know, is going to be on ESPNU. At Vermont, so we get two back-to-back ESPN games. Great for the program, great for the conference, great for our university, and more importantly, great for our fans and our growing fan base.
Coach, best of luck tonight.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
national anthem here at Pritchard Gymnasium as we get set for the start of tonight's contest between the Seawolves and the BU Terriers, the final America East meeting between these teams here at Pritchard. First for the visiting Boston U, as we take a look at the starting lineups. A lot of new faces. Not really had a lot of time to get to know those guys, but in the backcourt, one of the familiar faces, leading scorer on the team, DJ Irving, junior guard from Chester, Pennsylvania, averaging 15 points per contest. He's joined in the backcourt by a freshman, Maurice Watson, tied with Tommy Brenton for the league lead in assists. Coming from Lansdowne, Pennsylvania, he's 5'10". In the backcourt as well, another freshman, John Papali, out of Wallingford, Connecticut, at the swing position, 6'3", 190 pounds. Dom Morris, the big man up front out of Newark, Delaware. He's a junior going at 6'7", and a solid 240. And then last but not least, Malik Thomas, sophomore at 6'7", 190, out of Harlem in Manhattan. For the Stony Brook Seawolves, same starting five that we saw on Saturday in the win over Hartford. The backcourt of Carson Purifoy, who scored 15 points in his first start at point for the Seawolves. He's joined in the backcourt by the junior from Brooklyn, Dave Coley. He gets his name announced here by the PA. Coley coming off a 16-point performance against the Hawks. Tommy Brenton and Eric McAllister up front for the Seawolves, along with Jameel Warney, the team's leading scorer, the freshman from Plainfield, New Jersey, averaging 12 points and 7 rebounds a game.
By the way, another America East Rookie of the Week for Jameel. I think that's his sixth.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And just doing a great job holding the mantle as a Rookie of the Week.
Back-to-back Rookies of the Week after a double victory week for the Seawolves. 15 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 blocks for Warney, who's now had a block, at least one, in each of his last 9 games.
And in the last 2 games, the combined 5 blocks that he had have now propelled him into the league lead in that category. Seawolves have never had a player lead the league in shot blocking.
29 blocks on the season already for Warney, overshadowing the impressive 20 from Anthony Mayo, who often spells him at the 5 spot on the floor.
Yeah, and I mean, Mayo's is more impressive because it's in a lot less minutes. So Mayo comes in and he gets his in bunches.
Yeah, he's averaging just about half as many minutes per game as Warney, 26 versus 13.
Well, look, tonight's game, I think, is going to be about guard play. And obviously, his spotlight's going to be on Trey Purifoy and what he can do. DJ Irving and Watson constitute arguably the fastest backcourt in the America East. So the Seawolves are going to be under a lot of pressure because offensively, BU tries to get you in transition. That's going to put a premium on the Seawolves getting back on defense. But in order to make DJ Irving, feel some pressure, Purifoy is going to have to make himself an offensive threat. Doesn't have to score 15 like he did the other night. It'd be great. Steve Michael will take it in a heartbeat. But he's got to be a two-way player and not just allow Irving to not have to expend energy defensively and then run at will on the offensive side.
Some acrobatic, athletic moves by Tommy Brenton in the last game. Will we see something different tonight?
The other thing is the Seawolves are going to have to take advantage of that great size that they have in the front court and really, really pound the glass. They've got to be decisively a winner on both the offensive and the defensive glass.
McAllister and Morris to tip things off, and Eric gets up higher, gets the tip back to Tommy Brenton as we are underway. The Seawolves in control going from right to left here in the opening half, wearing their home whites, red numbers trimmed in gray. BU in the road reds, white numbers, wide white piping down the sides of the jerseys and shorts as Purifoy has it just across midcourt, bounces a pass for Brenton, lobs one inside for Warney, a little over his head, off his fingertips and behind him. It's picked up on the other side by Maurice Watson, near side of the floor. He'll dribble it down, tries to pass it into the paint, and the ball was deflected out by the Seawolves over the baseline, so it stays with BU exactly 30 seconds into the game.
Talking to Trey Purifoy's dad and his mom, you know, these guys all know each other from the AAU days, a lot of guys from in that Philly area, so they're very familiar with each other in terms of playing against each other. Now it's just on the collegiate stage.
Watson over on the far side of the floor, chased by Purifoy, gets a screen from Morris, kicks it to the outside, Thomas with it there, driving in, gives it off to Morris at the left elbow. Jump shot good from 15 feet away as BU gets on the board first.
Talk to people from Boston University, and they're faithful, and they say one of the biggest, nicest surprises that they've had is the development of Dom Morris.
Nice pass from Jamil Warney in the high post into Eric McAllister. But he moved his feet. Gets called for the travel, and the ball goes back over to BU as McAllister was trying to get position underneath. There's Watson dribbling across the timeline again, picked up by Purifoy. Interesting matchup of the two freshman guards, and a shame we won't really get to see that develop over the next coming years in the America East. Papali, left corner, tries his luck at a three and connects. And a quick 5-0 lead for Boston, a minute 30 play.
And that's what he does. I mean, he is a three-point shooter extraordinaire, a guy who will typically, in a season, shoot upwards of 40%.
And another whistle away from the ball and going against the Seawolves, first foul of the game on Eric McAllister. So as McAllister continues to fight for position in the low post, he got called for a travel a moment ago. Now gets called for an offensive foul off the ball.
Yeah, you got to like BU. They're coming in here. They got nothing to lose. They've already beat Vermont at home, so they're very confident.
Terriers had an 0-2 start to the conference. They are 2-2 following an impressive win over Vermont and a victory over the weekend against Binghamton. Here's Thomas on the outside, tries to drive his way in, showed shot, and in picking up his dribble, moved his feet first, gets called for the travel, and over to the Seawolves it will go. Exactly 2 minutes played here in the opening half. 5-0 Boston.
Well, Thomas trying to be fundamentally sound. He's not a three-point shooter. He will take some, but he's not terribly proficient at it.
And Coley, pass off his fingertips, dribbles into the hands of Watson. Can't pick it up clean, but in the scrum, ball goes over the sideline. Last touch by the Seawolves. So Stony Brook a little bit sloppy here in the opening minutes as another turnover gives the ball to the Terriers. And Watson again will take it into the offensive half court with BU going from left to right. High screen set by Morris. Reverse direction pass for Thomas, center of the arc. Dumps it around to the near side. DJ Irving of Morris. Baseline jumper halfway down, pops back out. Bodies hit the ground, and Purifoy comes away with the rebound. He drives down left side, puts the shot up. High bounce off the back of the cylinder, but the foul was called going against Maurice Watson.
Now, this is a play that won't make the stat sheet, but on that transition opportunity, Jamil Warney just showed what great court sense he has. He really didn't set a screen, but pinned his guy so that there couldn't be a second help defender to contest Purifoy.
McAllister in the post, backs down, Thomas goes up and throws it down with two hands. So the travel on the offensive foul pays off as McAllister finds his footing and finds the Seawolves on the board.
Now, for those of you watching, for those of you that kind of like to target Eric McAllister, that was a post move off the dribble.
Thomas puts up that three this time from the left wing, bounces off, no good. Brenton with the rebound ahead for the Seawolves as Anthony Mayo gets set to check in at the scorer's table. Purifoy on the near side, looks to Brenton in the left corner. Pressured there by Papali. Pass, a hard one to the center of the arc for Warney. Hands off Coley, steps around. Jumper no good from 18. And rebounded by Thomas, and up the other way it comes with Watson up the far sideline. Papali and back to Watson, and he will settle down the BU offense. 5-2, 16:36 and counting left to go first half. Rolled into the low post, beyond the reach of Don Morris, out of bounds. And it will go back over to the Seawolves as Mayo checks in for Warney.
Yeah, you like that Eric McAllister got that ball in the post, made a decisive move, and then spun off of Thomas and just really jammed it home. He was doing that, had a great practice yesterday to the point where the coaches would say, hey, now take that into the game. Just took a little bit there.
Goalie middle of the floor for McAllister, puts up a long two, back rim no. Mayo with the offensive rebound for the Seawolves, finds the cutting Coley, floats one up from eight, off the glass and good.
The mid-range game. Only City players can do it, and Dave Coley does it well.
Seawolves have scored the last four to make it a one-point game as Thomas dumps off to Papali. Pass to the middle of the floor. Watson Goes to his left, loses his footing, loses the ball into the lap of Coley. Takes the other way, 2-on-2 with Prenton. Pulls up just inside the free throw line. Jumper comes up short. Rebound loose. Prenton tracks it down ahead of Watson, then gets tripped up. And Watson picks up his second foul just like that.
They just had the Golden Globes last week, and Tommy just got one there. He knows how to draw fouls.
Best supporting.
No yellow card assessed to Prenton for diving. It'll be Seawolves ball on the other side of the official timeout. 15:48 left to go in the first half. Score BU 5, Stony Brook 4 on your longtime home for Seawolves Sports, WUSB.
Alrighty, give you a quick rundown. You're listening to Seawolves basketball. Stony Brook taking on Boston U. And some other games going on this evening. Wisconsin, Indiana, Northern Iowa, Creighton, Notre Dame, and St. John's. And so that 15-minute break, let's send it back to Pritchard for some more play-by-play.
All right, Rackett, thanks very much. Back here at Pritchard Gymnasium, 15:48 remaining in the first half. Seawolves trailing BU 5-4, but have scored the last 4 points. We'll have possession of the basketball following the immediate timeout.
Another one of these games, sorry, Kurt, another one of these games where you could just tell right off the bat that the Stony Brook bench is just going to win this battle if they do win the game. BU doesn't have much of a bench at all. They're going to just go with what they have, you know, with their top five or six. Stony Brook's bench tonight is going to be, you know, a main cog in this victory if the Seawolves get it.
Well, you know, you guys just mentioned the Golden Globes. I mean, both of these coaches really trying to write, you know, their script for best dramatic series. Obviously, the storyline for BU is to be the spoilers, and the Seawolves have their own goal of trying to make it where they've never been before. Every game is going to be a test for these Seawolves. You know, this was a team that was seen to be rebuilding in the wake of the graduation of four key players, and they're right atop the standings, and quite honestly, a lot of people didn't expect them to be and said, okay, is this real or is this a mirage? There are three teams that everybody wanted to see the Seawolves square up against. This is phase one. Phase two will come on Friday night against Vermont. And then, of course, everybody wants